If I looked at the first reading and the gospel reading and looked for the common thread there, which often exists, you may not see it as clearly as I do, but it really is about being chosen. The first reading from Exodus there, we have the people of Israel who have been called forward by God out of Egypt and then under the leadership of Moses, and they end up at the foot of Mount Sinai in the that part of the bottom part between Egypt and Israel, Sinai. Then very clearly we go to the gospel and we see the call, Matthew's version of the call of the 12, who then for the first time in Matthew's gospel get called apostles. Prior to that, they were called disciples. Disciples are followers. Apostles are those who are sent. Now, if I look at the call of the people of Israel and I looked at the apostles, when we look at biblical calling or being chosen or elected by God in the biblical context, it has really two elements to it. And they don't sit all that comfortably with us in the Western world. Because we're quite egalitarian, it seems to me. We think we travel along the thought pattern of, look, let's be fair, everyone's got to be fairly treated and all are the same. Well, biblical election by God is not like that at all. Let's look at the people of Israel. They were not the greatest force on earth at that time. They were slaves to a great force in Egypt. So when God calls them forward, it's not because they are a people who are powerful and that God can use them because of their power. Not at all. In fact, it's quite the opposite. They were a rambling lot of disaffected and unhappy people. And that may be why God chose them. He elected them to be his own. He called them a priestly people and a holy nation, if they listened to his voice and kept his commands. And every time that the Israelites get mentioned as God's chosen, the balance with that is they are also called to serve. So it's not seen as a reward, this being chosen by God, not at all. It is seen because there is these people are going to become an instrument for God. And that's there's a great element of service in that. So they have an unworthiness, and then they also have the ability to serve, yet they don't know that at the time. Fast forward to the gospel, and we look at that 12. And how did that turn out, Jesus? Every one of them deserted him at the end, but he eventually chose them, and it's in today's gospel that those words come through when he calls them apostles. So he said, come and follow me if you wish, and they did follow, but it wasn't until they were put in the driver's seat, as it were, that they became apostles, that they were sent. They were weak and broken, biblical chosen, weak and broken, and then became a force to be reckoned with. They even raised the dead, healed the sick, and cast out evil spirits. But they were not chosen because they were powerful or because they were great. They became great, like the people of Israel. They became great because they were chosen. Let's keep that in mind. They were not chosen because they were great. Quite the opposite. They became great because they were chosen. Let's look at that now if we looked at the language of being chosen in our own life. Now, the first time, and you may not realise this, but the first time that we demonstrate that we are a chosen people actually links into being a royal priesthood of people. And that comes at our baptism. Because the deacon or the priest says to the parents, "What do you ask for this child?" And they say, "We ask to have our child baptised." Or an adult would say, "I choose to be baptised." You have asked to have your child to be baptised in the church. It is your responsibility, therefore, to train this child in the practice of their faith. Some of you might recall those words being said at your own children's baptism. And then the priest takes the oil of catechumens. And that word catechumens basically means a candidate to become a Christian. And he dips his thumb in the holy oil and he places it over the candidate's heart. And he says words similar to this: "You have been chosen." And that's the public sign that this individual is chosen, and I often say, to become a little Christian. That's the first chosen experience that all of us share here tonight, for those of us who are baptised. It was right at your baptism when that oil was placed over your heart as a mark to everybody that you are marked by the love of God. You are now entering into being a priestly people. The next thing that happens in a child's life, it may well be communion, but the thing that brings them fully into being a member of the church after communion is actually confirmation. And at that point in confirmation, some of you who were here two Saturdays ago may remember one of our teachers standing here and saying, "Archbishop Christopher, I present to you these candidates for confirmation from our parish." The Archbishop then says, "Do you judge them to be worthy? Have they been well prepared?" And the teacher, for those of you who are here, would have she said something along the lines, "Yes," because she was too scared not to, because I was the one that prepared them. But "Yes, Archbishop, these children have been well prepared," along these lines, "and their parents have participated with the children fully in the program that the parish offers. And they have been chosen to be presented here tonight for the sacrament of confirmation." Chosen again. Baptism. And they're marked out with oil over the heart. Confirmation. Chosen. Marked out this time by the laying on of hands and the oil of sacred oil of chrism on their forehead. The next time that we experience chosen in the church is also in a sacramental setting. It is for those who get married. When the couple stand before their family and friends, the church, and before the minister of the church, and say, "I choose you to be my partner for life. I promise to be true to you in good times and in bad, in sickness and in health. I will love you and honour you all the days of my life. I choose you," again. And then the wife or the husband will say the same: "I choose you to be my husband." And da 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 da. And that's a public statement. This does not happen in some back room. This happens with witnesses. You must have two witnesses. So it's a very public statement. For those who don't get married and don't remain in a single life, the fourth encounter of being publicly being chosen and demonstrating that is actually at ordination. And the bishop or the archbishop will say to usually the rector of the seminary, the person who's been in charge of their formation, the candidate's formation, the archbishop will say, "Do you judge him to be worthy?" And then rector will say to the bishop, "After inquiry among the people of God and with those concerned with his education and formation, we choose this man to be called forward into the presbyterate." We choose this man. I remember those words very clearly. I remember there's a ceremony that happens, a simple ceremony that happens way before that, in the privacy of the rector's office, the rector of the seminary's office. It did in my day anyway, when we're called in and we sat there and he says, "The church chooses you, Richard, to be ordained to the presbyterate." And you have to sign a little document. It's called the commitment. Now it's done very publicly. In my day it was done with the, as I said, in the rector's office. "The church chooses you," which means that that's your final steps to be called into ordination to the priesthood, or the diaconate, then the priesthood. And I do remember saying to the rector at that time, I said, "I thank you." It was very humbling. I said, I thank you for calling me forward. And then I remember him putting his hand on my shoulder, which is not part of any ceremony because there were only the two of us there. And he says, "No, Richard, the church thanks you." So choosing is a relationship, and it's an ongoing relationship. The Archbishop then, back to ordination, then says that we have chosen this man, and through part of the ordination ceremony, these are the words that he uses. He finishes up by saying, "May God, who has begun the good work in you, bring it to fulfilment. May God, who has chosen you, bring these good works to fulfilment." And that's an ongoing process, as is matrimony, the sacrament of matrimony. And those four sacraments, baptism, confirmation, matrimony and ordination, you only receive them once. They are fed and nurtured by the sacraments of Eucharist, reconciliation or penance, and of course the anointing of the sick, which we can receive many times. Because as a chosen people, a royal priesthood, we need that constant nourishment. We have been moved, in one sense, from sitting in the passenger seat, like the apostles were, or when they were disciples, Jesus was driving the bus. And at their commissioning, when he chose them and sent them forward, they moved from being a passenger into the driver's seat. And that comes with an awesome responsibility. But as a result of that, as you've heard me say many times, we are here now. We are here because those chosen went out there and evangelised. And you better get used to that word, evangelised, because it's Pope Francis's big emphasis at the moment with synodality as well. Evangelised. It comes from the Greek word euangelion, which means praise. It's more than give thanks. It's glad tidings. We translate it into proclaim. But euangelion was when an emperor in battle or a general in battle, when they won the battle or won that particular fight, they would send forward evangelists, and that's what they were called, to proclaim that they had won the battle, to spread the good news that they had won. That's where evangelism comes from. And that's exactly what the apostles were asked and sent to do. And that's what we're sent to do, to become evangelists, because we are a priestly people together. By virtue of our baptism, we are called to go out and to proclaim the good news. And that's the common thread between the call of Israel and the call of the apostles and the creation of Christ's church. So my prayer to you, my prayer for you, is that may God, who has begun the good work in you, bring it to fulfilment.